speaker, our final speaker for this morning's slot, is Mark Finley. Mark is the Chief Commercial Officer at Moneypenny, another great organisation working in this sector. And anybody who's got Bristol University, EY and PwC in their CV is with me all the way. So Mark, I'm just going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Mark, we are sponsoring a champagne bar at 12 o'clock, so I know it's a little early, but please do feel free to grab yourself a glass of champagne. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Good excuse to get started early, get on the champagne. So last session before lunch, thanks for sticking with me. I don't know if this counts as the graveyard shift or if that's the one after lunch, I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay, so Mark Finley, Chief Commercial Officer at Moneypenny. I'll touch on who Moneypenny are in a little bit. I'm here today to talk about a sustainable approach to the new world of work and about ESG, which I think is very much a buzzword within boardrooms and organisations nowadays. I think if we were to be here 5 years ago, it wouldn't be on the agenda. But it's become very important, especially over the last couple of years, especially for investors. So ESG funds are predicted to be worth $1 trillion by 2030. And it's really, really high priority for firms looking to invest in that space. ESG used to be a nice to have, a bit of a differentiator, a bit of a niche category, but increasingly it's an absolute must and a necessity. And actually, if you aren't displaying very, very strong sustainability and ESG credentials, you're the odd one out, and it can impact your business. I think the COP26 conference in Glasgow was a big driver of that as well. And there's a growing realization that actually it's not just the responsibility of governments to lead on this, but it's the responsibility of businesses as well. And we really do need to come together to work towards sustainable goals. But businesses are not all nice, warm, fuzzy creatures that are just targeted and wanting to do the right thing by the environment. It's actually proven that it's having a strong correlation between companies with strong ESG credentials and financial performance. And I think when you get that linking of financial performance and ESG credentials, I think it becomes a lot more tangible for businesses, and the drive to actually pursue some of these goals becomes a lot more realistic. On the train on the way down here today, I was reading a survey from LEK Consulting, who'd done a survey of, I think it was 5,000 consumers, and 50% of them said they would be willing to pay more for products that are made with sustainable materials. And I think that translates into the legal sector as well, in that your clients will pay more for your services if you can demonstrate to them that you are you have those sustainable credentials as well. 20% of the world's top 2,000 businesses have now committed to move towards net zero. I actually thought it would be higher than that, and I'm not sure what the stats are in terms of when they will actually make that move, because I think what we've seen over the last few years is that companies are very good at stating what they will do, but the difficulty is in measuring that and reporting against that. So why is this important to law firms in particular? So if you are a listed law firm, you're publicly ranked on ESG, and must formally report on it. There's now a task force on climate-related financial disclosures. So that means that law firms who are listed on the stock exchange have to actually model out different climate change scenarios and report against what impact that will have on them as an organization, both on their bottom line and their future prospects. But it's not just about satisfying the boardroom and investors. I'm sure you're all aware there's a huge battle for talent out there. Millennials will make up 75% of the workforce by 2025. And a survey by CensusWide found that 65% of employees are more likely to work for businesses with strong ESG credentials. So in order to attract talent, you really need to put sustainability front and center of your organization's purpose and goals. Linked into that, so it'll help you to attract more employees, but also linked into that is maintaining those employees. So Harvard Business Review found that for firms with better ESG performance reduced their staff turnover by as much as 50% versus those firms that didn't have good ESG credentials. So again, that's linking back to the fact that ESG used to be seen as, I think, as a fluffy way and a nice to have, but actually now it's showing tangible business benefits, which I think raises its profile and its agenda within boardrooms and organizations. Linked into that then is a survey that DWF did, which found that 61% of businesses have lost out in procurement processes because of their ESG credentials not being strong enough. And we're seeing this increasingly as a provider into the legal sector. Most of the procurement processes that we see nowadays, there's a strong emphasis on what are your sustainability credentials, providing what are your intentions, are you planning to go to net zero? And I think that's only going to continue. We service firms across professional services, but I think legal in particular is where we're seeing it play out the most in terms of that emphasis on ESG. Moneypenny provide outsourced communications to a vast array of businesses, 21,000 across the UK and the US. So we provide outsourced switchboard, live chat services, and outbound calling services. We service about 500 law firms in the UK, about 1,000 globally. A third of the top 200 law firms are clients, and four out of the five magic circle. So for us, ESG is just as important for us as it is to you, because as a supplier into the legal sector, we essentially fall into the same credentials as you guys do, because we've got to satisfy the same needs as you, because it's all about your, not just what you do as a firm, but what your supply chain does and the clients that you work with as well. So at Moneypenny, as we're increasingly seeing this growing requirement for businesses to become more sustainable, and asking how our services actually fit in to their sustainability profile, and how the new ways of working and hybrid is impacting those sustainability targets. So we commissioned a report with WorkTech to explore some of these themes. And what we found was that hybrid working is actually expanding the boundaries of sustainability from a place-based approach to a people-centric approach. And what I mean by that is, historically, sustainability and corporate social responsibility used to be very much focused on the buildings in which you operate from, how environmentally friendly are those. But with the shift to hybrid working and remote working, there's a lot more focus on empowering and educating staff to deliver change and driving long-term sustainable change within your workforce. So a kind of bottom-up approach rather than a top-down approach. So as part of this research, we identified four different typologies of how businesses were approaching sustainability. So top left is placemaker. So this would be your more traditional office-based corporate culture. And these businesses use their buildings to highlight their green credentials. So focus on smart technology, recycling facilities, energy efficient design, and sustainable transport. Typically, these companies are occupying new buildings because older buildings don't have those same kind of credentials. Example, Google campus at King's Cross. So they've got 600 bicycle parks, but only 4 car park spaces. So really pushing employees away from car parking. Abode is another example of that. They're very, very focused on their environmentally friendly buildings. They've got 22 buildings across their portfolio with LEED credentials, which is LEED and BREEAM are the two main credentials in terms of certifications for environmentally buildings and friendly buildings. 22 Bishopsgate, it's down the road, as an active commuter park. So they've got space for 1,700 bikes, bike repair stations, and 1,300 lockers. So all these new buildings that are being occupied now are very much focused on green credentials. Moving on to change makers. So change makers have a different approach in that they embrace the value of influencing green behavior through social support and peer-to-peer encouragement. So driving and empowering employee-led initiatives and green champions to drive this. And that's something that we've done at Moneypenny actually, is within the business, there was someone whose passion was sustainability, and we've essentially made their core job part-time, and the rest of their time is focused on ESG-related initiatives. And that's had a really big impact for us. And I think it makes a difference that it isn't coming from, it isn't being done from management down, it's actually been done from the employees. And I think if there's one takeaway that I would say from today is identify that person within your business, empower them, give them a budget, give them the time to actually make a difference, because they're much more likely to have an impact with your employees than anything that you drive top level down. And research has backed that up as well. So appointing green champions can be the most effective tools in promoting employees to deliver environmental initiatives. And also, research shows that making changes can be most effective at times of disruption. So we're certainly in times of disruption over the last few years. So they're more susceptible to make changes at times like these. So if you are going to make changes, now's the time to do it. An example of a change maker is Genentech, which is a pharmaceutical business. They've been very public in their stated goal that they want to educate and empower their employees. Their green jeans is what they call their employees. They have monthly guest speakers on environmental issues. They have movie nights on climate change themes. They host an annual eco fair. The Green Jeans implemented composting in the staff cafeteria. They stopped the use of bottled water within the organization. And actually stopping the use of bottled water saved them $200,000 a year. So again, there's environmental impact, but also the kind of financial impact as well. Choice givers. So these are companies who've embraced the new ways of working and hybrid and remote working as a way to enhance their sustainability credentials. So this is all about giving people choice about when and where to work, and then measuring the impact that has on the carbon footprint. A couple of examples of this. So Xerox allowed 25% of its 27,000 person workforce to work remotely full time, and they calculated the result of that was 91 million less miles driven and 41,000 metric tons a year saved. And I think that's the important bit about this, is measuring the impact. It's the hardest thing to do, but it's the most important thing to do, is actually measuring the impact that these changes make and reporting against them. Similarly, some microsystems did research on their employees' carbon footprint, and what they found was that 98% of the employees' carbon footprint was associated with the commute to and from work every day. So by cutting that out, they're actually reducing the carbon emissions by 98%, which is pretty significant. Finally, arbitrators. So these are organizations that extending the green initiative beyond the workplace and into the community. So they like to offer subsidized transport, smart home energy solutions within employees' homes, and community-based strategies. They take a more active role in actually lobbying for their employees on green issues. A couple of examples of companies that would fit into that would be Salesforce. So Salesforce have already achieved net zero status. They've committed $100 million in grants and 2.5 million volunteer hours as well over the next 10 years to support non-profit climate-related activities. And they've also produced a sustainability at home guide to help their employees manage their carbon footprint within their own home. Patagonia is another good example of a business which is taking that approach. They've made it clear that from a political perspective, they're only voting for eco-friendly leaders and made it central to its sustainability pledge. They also have a self-imposed earth tax of 1%. So 1% of all Patagonia revenues are donated to non-for-profit environmental causes, which is pretty impressive. So what are we doing from a MoneyPenny perspective? I think the reality is those typologies are characteristics of businesses, and often businesses might fall into different parts of those categories. So, for example, MoneyPenny, we've got a 96,000 square foot building in Wrexham in Wales. It was built in 2016 and still houses the vast majority of our employees. So, a kind of traditional placemaker, if you will, in that we're very much focused on how can we make that place of work as sustainable and environmentally friendly as possible. So, for example, we use ground source heat pumps, recycled rainwater, energy efficient lighting, fresh air ventilation. So that's our inside space, but we also have a large outside space as well. So wetlands, we've got beehives, we've got a vegetable patch. So very much about kind of creating that kind of campus feel. We utilize Facebook Workplace as our intranet, which is really good for driving staff engagement. On there, we have a group called Eco Pennies, who are all interested and aligned in their desire to focus on sustainable and environmental issues. And that group kind of get together on a regular basis and talk about what issues that they can impact from the ground up, and then they kind of feed up to us from a management team board level what things do they want us to focus on. So that helps us map out our roadmap for things that we want to tackle from an ESG perspective. This year we've also got undertaken carbon offsetting with Ecology to offset our scope one emissions, and we are embracing hybrid working and also allowing our clients to supporting our clients in that role as well. Next on our agenda is electric charging points. We're mapping shift patterns and staff locations to marry those up so that where possible we can enable car sharing. We've implemented a sustainable procurement policy so we can focus on local sourcing, minimal packaging, reducing palm oil. And we're also looking into the use of a electric work bus. So that, again, just to reduce the amount of cars that hit and come in every day. Ultimately, though, from a sustainability perspective, it's about having a strategy that aligns with your broader corporate purpose and values, committing to some goals, measuring yourself against those goals, and ensuring that your network of suppliers and customers are all aligned on that journey. I think that's the key point. At Moneypenny, we don't pretend to be experts in sustainability or ESG. We're just doing what we can. We've got a roadmap and we're working to try and be better every day. And I think if all organizations just take that tack and take small steps along the journey, we'll be in a lot better place. So just to finish off then, we created a quiz for you to fill out, actually. So there's a QR code there. If you scan that code, it'll take you to the quiz. And through those questions, it helps you to shape what kind of organization you are, in terms of what typology it is. And then the report, which is about a 16, 17 page report that we produced in conjunction with WorkTech, again, can be found here or on my LinkedIn. We're working with organizations to help them achieve their ESG goals. We can drive efficiencies in the employee base, reduce FTE, and also reduce the carbon footprint of those FTE as well. That's it from me.
Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate that. Has anybody got any questions they would like to ask Mark before he disappears?
Don't ask me anything too technical about sustainability.
I've got a question which isn't about sustainability, really. One of the things that's very true, I think, of Moneypenny is it's established an incredible place in Wrexham, you know, which has really been part of the success and the culture of the business. As you have to shift in the way that these organisations, culturally, that must be quite a challenge. And I think there's resonance there with how law firms operate. You know, it's about great place, great office.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that we've done actually is trying to get all our employees back into the office so we could try and get that culture back. And then create a hybrid model on our terms rather than a lot of organizations have morphed into it. So we've just launched the hybrid program which has been very well received. But we are very much a people-based, team-based culture. So it is front and center for us. How do we maintain that in a hybrid world? And the hybrid model that we've designed, that is front and center in that we actually require senior team members to be in the office more than junior team members, because we know that junior team members learn from the senior team members. So rather than the flip side, which it often is, that the senior team member has got a bigger house and more space and therefore wants to work at home, we flip that on its head, and treating the ability to work from home and hybrid as a privilege and not a standard. Now, I know that's not the same for every organization. It's a different skill base in terms of what we do to law firms. But what we found is actually that's been well received. We were very nervous about it by saying, everybody, right, we want you back into the office, and then we'll gradually let you back out. But the attrition that we've seen from that has actually been fairly limited, and a lot less actually than what we saw during the pandemic.
Very good. Right. Can we thank Mark, please? Thank you, Mark. Fantastic. So we are wrapping the stage there, everybody. This stage is going to be back at 1:30. I think I've got that right. Yeah, I've got that right. There's still presentations going on the main stage, the Crown stage, Future of Legal Services, so you can catch the end of that if you want. I think there's probably some food and refreshments out there. And we will be back, and we'll be back on time rather than the 5 minutes late that we've been running this morning, this afternoon. So thanks, everybody, for joining us.